committee. How's that? He probably would like to be. Sparky, where's that, what's the video over there? Where's my name plate? Where's everybody?
Did you find it?
Huh? Where's everybody?
I don't know, but Dad here is trying to get us in line.
Brian's got an extra one.
Coke. I think we'll get started. We're a little short of a quorum, but that's all right. We're going to call the Business, Industry, and Jobs Committee to order. We're talking today with the OLA, the Legislative Auditor Commission, and we're going to talk today about the misclassification of employees as independent contractors. And we apparently, I've looked at the report, looks like there's a number of some serious problems out there and some recommendations, and I don't know if they take legislative action or not. We'll get into that in a minute, but apparently we need a more of a coordinated response to this issue, and I've been told it's kind of a number of people involved here. So with that, Deb Genod, Office of the Legislative Audit Commission, welcome to the committee, and we've seen a lot of you lately, huh?
Wearing many
which is
hats
good, yeah, that's
week,
good,
Mr. Chair.
Okay, give us an overview of what's going on here, huh? Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'm Deb Genod with the Office of the Legislative Auditor, and I am indeed pleased to be here this afternoon to run you through the highlights of our evaluation report on misclassification of employees as independent contractors. We issued this report back in November, and I gave this same presentation yesterday to the Senate Tax Committee as well. I'm going to talk about just a couple of things for you from the report today. First, what misclassification is, how big a problem we think it is in Minnesota, why it matters, and what the state is doing about it. Let me start with just a few key points. We estimated that misclassification, we estimated that 14% of employers who are registered for the unemployment insurance system misclassified at least one worker in 2005. Overall, they misclassified a relatively small proportion of their workers. Misclassification, however, has negative impacts that are felt broadly by workers, employers, government. And Minnesota's response thus far has been fragmented and fairly limited in scope. First, what is worker classification? Workers come in a lot of different types. There are employees like me, I'm an employee of the state of Minnesota, and there are independent contractors who are self-employed. The distinction between those two, whether you are an employee or an independent contractor, is not an option that can be agreed upon or simply chosen. There are criteria established in law, rule, legal rulings that define whether a worker is an employee or an independent contractor. This classification depends on factors such as the degree of control over when, where, and how work is accomplished, the ability to discharge the worker without liability, how that worker is paid, who furnishes the materials and the tools to get the job done. In Minnesota statute, there are specific criteria, 9 of them, that lay out for the construction industry specific criteria to determine whether a construction worker is an employee or an independent contractor. Let me just run through a couple of quick examples from IRS guidance to illustrate. Take, for example, Sarah, who is a tile setter. She works with a builder full time at various construction sites, uses her own tools, works in the order determined by the builder, is paid piecework, and does not perform similar work for other builders. According to the IRS, Sarah is an employee. Her wages would be reported on a Form W-2 that goes to the IRS and ultimately to the Minnesota Department of Revenue as well. Take, for example, Elizabeth. She's a tile setter who has a signed contract with a builder to do the work in an entire housing complex. She's paid a flat amount for services rendered, carries her own workers' compensation insurance, and is responsible for any repairs if there's a problem with the work done in that complex. According to the IRS, Elizabeth is an independent contractor. The amount that she's paid would be reported to the IRS on a Form 1099 miscellaneous income. There's not a lot of data out there about how many workers are misclassified. What we went to the Department of Employment and Economic Development and used audit data that they have compiled from their audits of the unemployment insurance industry and unemployment employers who are registered in that unemployment system. Using those data, we estimated that 1 in 7 employers, or about 14%, misclassified at least one worker in 2005. In real numbers, that was about 17,500 employers of about 125,000 registered in the system. Overall, they misclassified a relatively small proportion of their employees. About 1% of all employees among those randomly audited employers, or 6% of employees among those that were found to have misclassified at least one. So it's a fairly small proportion, but still significant. Misclassification occurs in many industries. We were asked to do this work, I think, specifically because of concerns in the construction industry, but our analysis showed that it was also prevalent in retail trade, entertainment, healthcare, and other industries in Minnesota. Some misclassification is intentional. It was difficult for us to tease this out from the data, but we did have anecdotal evidence and some indication in audit notes showing that it was clearly an intentional act. For example, there was a builder who ran several supervisor and work crew, construction crews in the area. 1 month that the supervisors and those workers were treated as employees. The next month, they had all been spun off as independent contractors. But clearly, we think there was an intentional shift in classification in that case. I also want to note that our estimates of 1 in 7 employers misclassifying are conservative. Our data, again, were limited to those employers who were registered in the unemployment insurance system. So that to the extent that there are employers out there who do not participate in that system but should, our numbers are underestimates. We also didn't pick up any misclassification that would occur in the cash economy. Misclassification is often very much intertwined with issues of workers being paid in cash off book. We didn't really pick that up, again, because we were linked to audits of unemployment insurance. That's important to remember. Why does it matter? There are many, many obligations linked to employment status that really only exist if there is an employer-employee relationship. That includes coverage by unemployment insurance, workers' compensation, Social Security, fair labor standards. There are tax laws that are linked to employment status. Occupational safety and health, family and medical leave, all of these listed on the screen. To the extent independent contractors, very few, if any, of these apply. So there are very important implications of employment status. The impact of misclassification, obviously, is workers who should be covered under all of those programs and laws that I just had up on the screen wouldn't be. And that is actually probably one of the biggest motivators to misclassify. There are also tax implications. Again, obligations to belong to join the unemployment insurance system and pay unemployment taxes are linked to having an employee. There are also income tax withholding implications for the state. This I'd like to highlight just a little bit is we know that tax compliance among those who are subject to income tax withholding, those are people who work for wages and salaries, tax compliance among those taxpayers is very, very high. Nationally, they voluntarily report about 99% of their income on tax returns. Voluntary compliance among the self-employed is much lower. In all types of self-employment, the self-employed voluntarily report on average about 43% of their income. So there are big tax implications for the state of Minnesota here.
You wouldn't have even a ballpark number. I suppose this is millions and millions of dollars. Hundreds of millions or millions? Or
Mr. Chair, we weren't able to tie a number
I didn't think you'd be able,
onto
yeah.
our estimates, because to do that, and we wanted to, we would have needed individual level.
But these numbers balance our budget?
Mr. Chair, I don't know. Perhaps the people from the Department of Revenue.
We'll find out in a minute. Yeah. But it is, I'm not being light about this, but I'm sure it's a big number. I mean,
Mr. Chair, the IRS last did an estimate of the impact of misclassification in 1984. They found nationally 3.4 million workers misclassified with a federal tax loss of $1.6 billion then, which translates in 2006 dollars to $2.7 billion nationally. There's a significant tax impact, I think, on Minnesota, but, Mr. Chair, I just can't wrap a number around
it
for
you. I didn't expect it to have it. Go ahead.
There are also issues of fairness involved. Misclassification puts compliant employers at a competitive disadvantage. We ran just a small example to help illustrate this. Take a Minnesota employer who employs drywall installers. Drywall installers, on average in our state, get paid a base rate of $30 an hour. A compliant employer would pay unemployment insurance taxes, both state and federal, Social Security and Medicaid, and also a workers' compensation premium for those workers that total up to another $7.82 an hour. If that employer were to misclassify and avoid those obligations, their cost would remain at $30 an hour, a 26% difference between those two. If you translate that to a typical drywall installation job for a new house, which we were told was about 175 hours of work, the difference is $6,600 in labor costs for the compliant employer and $5,200 for the non-compliant employer. So there are competitive issues. How does Minnesota approach this? Classification is of interest to three state agencies. The Department of Employment and Economic Development is interested in classification as it pertains to Unemployment Insurance Administration. Their authority and guidance related to classification is in Minnesota Statutes Chapter 268, also in their rules and relevant case law. The Department of Labor and Industry is interested in classification as it pertains to workers' compensation, enforcement of labor standards, and occupational safety and health. Their guidance on classification is in three different chapters of state statute, rules, and case law as well. And the Department of Revenue is interested because classification has implications for income tax compliance, income tax withholding. Because our tax laws on the income tax is linked to the federal income tax, Minnesota's laws and guidance relative to classification are those of the Internal Revenue Service. But one other point here before I move on is that it sounds like there's a lot of different rules, a lot of different criteria, and that is true. But in general, we think the decision-making factors here in determining the classification are far more similar than they are different. But there are nuances that matter when you look at classification in each of those different program areas. We went to each of the three agencies and talked about how they enforce compliance with classification and how each of the agencies identify misclassification and deal with it. In all three agencies, enforcing classification issues really is a byproduct of how they administer those relevant programs. In our opinion, those enforcement efforts range from limited to modest. as I said, the Department of Employment and Economic Development has a systematic audit program that can identify misclassification. They're required to audit 2% of employers a year. Misclassification is a key issue in those audits. And in fact, that is the most systematic means of identifying classification issues. The Department of Revenue in 2006 initiated a small audit program in its withholding division, and that targets employers specifically regarding misclassification issues. As of the middle of last year, they had completed 37 audits. 24 of those, they found misclassification, or 65%. The employer had indeed misclassified at least one worker. And those employers should have withheld $600,000 in additional taxes, but had not. Those audits hadn't gone far enough through the process for us to know what the actual collection and tax revenue, additional revenue to the state was, but the early indication was clearly that those were productive audits. The Department of Labor and Industry has a much more reactive approach to dealing with misclassification. They would identify it and deal with it if classification was an issue in a complaint related to application of labor standards or workers' compensation. For example, if there were a complaint that an employer should be providing workers' compensation coverage but wasn't, and if the employer wasn't providing coverage because they misclassified their workers as independent contractors, then labor and industry would deal with that issue. We also found that the three agencies did not share information about the instances of misclassification that they found, nor did they coordinate their enforcement strategies. In state law, there's no specific penalty for misclassification. There are penalties that would apply, again, related to the administration of those programs where classification is relevant. So if an employer failed to have workers' compensation coverage because all of their workers were misclassified as independent contractors, then that employer could be penalized for failure to have mandatory workers' compensation coverage. Similarly, in unemployment insurance, an employer could be penalized because the misclassification caused them to not remit the proper amount of unemployment insurance tax. There is a new law on the books, effective 2009, related to certification of construction workers that they would now, starting in 2009, a construction worker that wants to function as an independent contractor needs to be certified by the Department of Labor and Industry that they are capable of operating as an independent contractor. Without that certificate in hand, they must always be treated as an employee. But we don't know what the impact, it's not effective until 2009, so we weren't able to do any kind of estimating about what the impact of that law would be on compliance.
We can do it.
Most of our recommendations are made to the three agencies and really are about capitalizing those on those efforts that are already underway. for example, we recommend that the agencies, to the fullest extent possible, standardize the criteria that they use for determining worker status, that they establish procedures to share information among themselves about employees and employers that have been found to misclassify, and that they coordinate their enforcement programs to make the most effect possible, or most effectiveness of the efforts that are underway. We also think the legislature should consider authorizing a penalty for repeated instances of misclassification to add another tool to the toolbox here for compliance. And with that, I'll just wrap up. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
On the recommendations, maybe they're going to tell us how they're going to do this. Do they do this on their own, or do we need to legislate something? On the top three, standardize, sharing procedures, and coordinate enforcements, they should be able to do that.
Mr. Chair,
maybe
yes,
they'll be telling us that they're going
to
do that.
They should be able to. They
should be doing it now.
Yeah, they are doing some things right now, and they have an update for you on the progress made thus far.
And the penalty part might take some language, right?
Correct.
Okay. All right. Well, there's a lot of folks out there, I guess. But, Senator Gimsey.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In your investigation of this, in your audit of this situation, did you look at all into what would motivate these individuals, these contractors and private employers to engage in such an activity as this that, and a risky venture, to say the least? Do you have a sense of what motivates them to do that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gamsey, yeah, there are a lot of obligations that can be avoided by misclassifying. An employer who treats all of their workers as independent contractors has less interaction with the occupational safety and health, labor standards laws, Social Security, Medicaid. There are costs to be saved and obligations to be avoided by misclassifying.
Okay. I guess I knew that.
Chairman.
Senator Tabassoni.
Chairman.
Mr. General, some misclassification is intentional, and that's, I understand, because of what you just answered to Senator Gimsey and how you've been doing this. How is it that you were able to come up with these misclassifications and the departments are missing them? Or are the departments not missing them?
Mr. Chair, Senator Tomassoni, we relied in our estimates on misclassification that was identified by unemployment insurance auditors who went to these employers, looked at the books and the records, and made a determination that workers had, in fact, been misclassified. So we didn't go in and look at agency records. We relied on the unemployment insurance auditors' determinations.
And in the event of unintentional misclassification, what actually happens there? Do they just screw it up, or what goes on?
Mr. Chair, Senator Tomassoni, the rules are confusing, and they're nuanced. I think everyone from the three departments would say the same. And there were indications in some of the audit records when we read the narratives, for example, that there were employers who simply thought they could choose. They didn't realize, particularly, I think, among smaller businesses, who didn't realize that there were actually laws, rules, and criteria that would surround these distinctions. And they thought they could just choose, and in those circumstances would generally choose the easiest, which is to treat people as independent contractors.
And were most of the things that happened in the construction industry, or was it just all across the board?
Mr. Chair and Senator Tomassoni, there's actually a table. I'm going to have to flip through here. About page 19 of the report shows the breakdown of audit information by industry. The first column shows the estimated percentage of employers in that industry found to have misclassified. So construction industry is there actually kind of in the middle of the list, but it is prevalent among many across industries in the state.
I think when we first started talking about that, that was most of our assumptions was that it was the construction industry, but now we, according to this report, Senator Tomassoni, it's not just there, it's all over.
Mr. Chair, we were contacted by individuals and unions and employers, also from a variety of industry groups when we began the evaluation, and they asked us, could you make us a case study in this, because it's an important issue in our industry as well. And often the focus has been on construction. And indeed, there is an issue, a problem in the construction industry, but it's also in other industries as well.
Well, you can see that the global thing is that certainly it is a disadvantage to the employers that are doing the right thing, so to speak, and paying these things, and puts them at a big disadvantage until we get a little tougher on the folks. All right, any further questions from the legislature audit? Okay, then we'll hear from the departments of revenue, labor, and deed. You want to do it in that order, or do you all want to come up, or is Mr. McElroy in the building?
I think Lee Nelson from the Department of Employment and Economic Development is pinch hitting for Commissioner McElroy.
All right, I guess the obvious questions would be, certainly you've read the report. You know what the auditor's saying, and what are we going to do to clean this up? I hope that's the goal here.
Yeah, well, Chairman, maybe
I know, you know, the money we're losing has got to be big time, but
it's meaningful. There's no question about it. It's meaningful. Yeah. Maybe I'll start out, and then the other two can pitch in whenever they feel appropriate. First and foremost, I want to commend the legislative auditor for the quality report. We concur with all the findings as they relate to the departments. Since issuance of the report, we've already had multiple meetings, not only between the three agencies, but also with labor representatives like Dick Gangfang and others, just to discuss what more we can do in the enforcement area. I think, first and foremost, I think we need to do a better job of communicating with each other, the agencies. Now, what we found in the tax area is that if a taxpayer is out of compliance in one tax type, they're probably out of compliance in another tax type. So we try to share information within the agency in that respect. We haven't done as good a job as we could have between agencies. So if someone's out of compliance in Commissioner Stigham's workers' comp area, it'd be great if that agency communicated with us and said, maybe you should take a look at withholding. And the same thing with deeds. So we've met. First and foremost, we wanted to meet to discuss data practices concerns, because sharing information between agencies, especially taxpayer information, is always a sensitive issue. So we got our data practices experts together. They confirmed to us that there was no legal impediment to sharing this information, that the flow of information is appropriate and legal. So we've been doing that on a much more ongoing basis. Just last week, Deed sent over some information on audit information that they had come up with to share with our withholding division. And so the flow of information is already much improved over prior to the issuance of the report. Also, we've also begun discussing uniformity of definitions. Right now, we have three agencies that operate in this area, and the definitions, for the most part, are similar, but there are some very important nuances, as legislative auditor referred to, that we need to address. Essentially, it's a nine-factor test that's applied, and it's a fact-specific totality of the circumstances test. So even if you had the same set of facts, two different fact determiners could come up with a different conclusion. One's an independent contractor, one's not. So there is always going to be that when you have a nine-factor test like that. But the Department of Revenue, we actually have a wrinkle that's a function of federal law. And it's called the 530 Safe Harbor. It's an IRS law. And it would take a legislative action to decouple from that definition. And what that definition basically does, in simple terms, it says even if you don't meet the nine-factor test, there's a safe harbor. If you relied on an IRS audit and they concluded that you were not an employee, these weren't employees, or if the biggest, loophole in that definition is if the industry you operate in, it has been determined that there is a lot of noncompliance in that industry, you get a free pass. And so that's a safe harbor that causes a wrinkle within the definitions that we've talked to Senator Bach and some others about potentially addressing that and potential of really repealing that safe harbor. We think we have to have more discussions. We're scheduled to meet with Senator Bach next week on that. But that is the biggest difference between the three agencies as far as the definitional. The department in the past has been very, I think, diligent about coming forward with ideas of how to kind of stop the noncompliance in this area. The last 3 years, we've come forward with a withholding requirement legislation in the construction industry to say that there should be at least a 2% withholding requirement, because we did find that the non-compliance rate in that industry was so pronounced. So I know the Senate has embraced that. It was in the tax bill last year, and hopefully we can get that passed this year. We have another piece of legislation this year that I think will also expand the scope of withholding and help address this issue. And basically it says if a business is notified by the IRS or the Department of Revenue that one of their independent contractors has a wrong SS number, they will be required to institute what we call backup withholding. So we're constantly trying to find ways to kind of address the noncompliance in these areas, and we'd be happy if you have any suggestions where we can go further. We'd be more than happy to hear them.
Okay, former Speaker of the House, Figham, from the lower body, how are you?
Very good, Chairman.
Good afternoon.
Thank you.
How are you, my friend?
Thank you for having us. We'll discuss that lower body a little bit later. thank you, Chairman Messon and members. This is the first time I get an opportunity to be before a Senate committee. Having done this many times in the House, I feel a little nervous sitting before the the upper body members.
You got it right now.
And appropriately so. Chairman Metzen, if I could, I would like to certainly echo some of the words that Commissioner Innes did about the taking very serious the OLA report. Certainly, looking at their recommendations and giving a commitment to you with the legislature, with DEED, with the Department of Revenue and DLI, to make sure that we address their recommendations and address what is a very serious problem in relationship to many issues from taxation to unemployment to workers' compensation coverage for workers who are misclassified at this time. Although I want to put maybe just a different perspective on it, Mr. Chairman, if I could, is from DLI and for you as senators and for the legislature itself. Oftentimes, when you get an legislative auditor's report, oftentimes the legislature tries to react to that report and then pass laws in response to those recommendations, which are probably very, very appropriate action to take. In regards to the OLA report, which often comes up with critical problems that need to be addressed. Giving credit to you and giving credit to the Senate and to the House, to the legislature this past year, you were basically on the horizon. You acted in advance, and I want to tell you that you should feel good about that, that, in fact, even before the OLA got involved last year, before the legislative auditor got involved, this legislature, you and the Senate, passed a law, or was acting on a law at that time anyway, before OLA got involved, to address the misclassification of independent contractors in the construction area. You were in advance. You should feel good about that. You were probably on the horizon, and we certainly need to do more now in regards to communication, in regards to a standardized criteria, in regards to penalties as the OLA responds to. But it's good to know that the legislature was probably in advance of the OLA report. That doesn't happen very often. And since that doesn't happen very often, I want to give the due and proper credit to the legislature for the action which they take. Very quickly, if I could, to the construction industry and the law that passed last year, Chairman Metzen, we have completed the SONAR in DLI. We have completed the new rules to be promulgated. Both the SONAR and the new rules are sitting with the governor's office right now for their approval. To be brought forward, the SONAR being the statement of need and reasonableness of the rules that followed the law of last year. Specifically for the construction for the construction industry itself, we are going to set one standard, and there will be one standard for determining whether a worker be an employee or an independent contractor. Now, I think that one standard will be able to be used between workers' compensation, OSHA, our labor standards, wage and hour, unemployment insurance, and indeed, as Commissioner Innes says, there is some little difficulties that we have to work out with, I think, some federal problems with Department of Revenue. And just getting to one absolute standard is a little more difficult than just passage of this rule, as we have to work with the feds as well. Secondly, it's going to the rules that are being promulgated right now that will be soon within the next weeks out to the public. The rules are going to expressly talk about the sharing of information and the coordination, the investigation, the enforcement activities between the departments, as the OLA has recommended. Currently in rule right now, again, only for the construction area, for construction industry, but as Senator Metzen mentioned earlier, we thought that that's where a lot of the problems were probably taking place. And in addition, of course, there is now penalties for up to $5,000 for knowingly misrepresenting a worker as an independent contractor. So that is all in the works right now. Consider the law that we passed last year and the rules which are being promulgated right now. Consider that law and rules as a pilot. The law and the rules are basically setting up that situation right now. It sets up the situation that unless you have an exempt certificate in construction, unless you have an exempt certificate which you have to apply for in advance, up front, prove you're an independent contractor, you will be considered an employee. And I think that that's basically where we're at right now. You look at the auditor's report, and hopefully with the coordination, the communication, and the rules, that law that you passed last year coming forward, we've taken some appropriate and right steps in addressing what certainly is a real concern.
Right now, do we just kind of react to complaints, or is there any kind of looking for rule breakers, or do you just respond to?
Well, speaking from DLI, we basically, Senator Metzen, respond to complaints and tips. That is correct. Complaints, basically tips, and we do go ahead and we issue penalties, but our penalties from DLI, basically we issue penalties for not having workers' compensation coverage, not for misclassifying someone or an employee. We don't issue penalties so much for that as for not having the coverage.
I keep hearing, and I got to say it, we keep hearing about FedEx. You know, how does that work? And are they all, are you familiar? Somebody said they're kind of, is that Nelson? Is that Mr. Nelson? Would that be something?
I think we'll turn to Assistant Commissioner Nelson for that,
yeah,
because
I think
their
that's
agency's
more
taking
your,
the lead there.
Daily week, but I've heard it so often that I'm starting to believe it, that they're not paying these fair rates.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Lee Nelson. I work in legislative and legal affairs at the Department of Employment and Economic Development. The first thing I'd like to say is that Commissioner McElroy would have preferred to be here today, but he had a longstanding prior engagement out in the Chanhassen-Chaska area, so he apologizes for not being here. I do want to say that we indeed thinks the legislative auditor did a very nice job on this report overall. We don't agree with everything that's in there. We don't agree with the new penalties that suggested, but overall we think the report was excellent and it was comprehensive. A couple of things before I get to answer your specific question, Senator Metzen. I do want to put one thing in perspective. The legislative auditor referred that Deed does audit 2% of employers. Those employers are 125,000 registered employers. So in 2007, Deed did over 3,000 audits of employers, those on-site visits with employers. Deed has 34 auditors spread throughout the state of Minnesota, which do these audits. Now, that is for unemployment insurance compliance. We are required by the Department of Labor to do that amount. And I will say that that is their focus. Now, we do inform the Department of Revenue of our audit results, but those auditors are funded through a federal grant to look for unemployment insurance compliance, which is the classification of workers, and the wages paid to those workers, the money's paid, are they all considered wages, properly considered wages, and then whether the unemployment insurance taxes are paid. So there is a systematic undertaking. We do agree that we do need to share information much more than we have in the past with the Department of Revenue. We need to work a lot closer with the Department of Revenue and with the Department of Labor and Industry. We need to, we will admit to getting some sort of kind of tunnel vision and siloed, admit to that, and we are working with that. We are committed to work with both labor and industry and revenue on these issues going forward. Senator Metzen, as specifically to FedEx, I don't know to what extent I can publicly comment on some of the things which are occurring. There are things occurring in the area of that particular company.
You don't have to get into details, I guess, but you could kind of nod your head that I'm probably half right, though. Huh? Something's
one,
going on here.
One thing I do, I would like to say, Senator, is FedEx reports a lot of workers as employees.
Yeah, we know that.
Thousands of workers as employees.
And they're very important. I understand that. But
FedEx does operate under five separate companies in Minnesota, as I understand it. So it's not as simple as
No, nobody's suggesting it's simple, but they have, and we love them. They have a lot of workers. They have competitors too in the state that are probably playing by the rules. That puts them at a disadvantage.
Senator, members of the committee, I will comment because I believe it is public. The state of California, California Supreme Court refused to hear a appellate court decision which held that all the workers for FedEx Ground are employees, and for various things in the state of California. The Internal Revenue Service has issued a penalty on FedEx, I believe, for 2004 for failure to do federal withholding, and are looking at other years. I think that was publicly announced. So the issue is of concern, and it is not. We have discussed the issues with the others at the table here already on that, and are not unmindful of that issue.
Okay, thank you. Senator Tavassoni.
Chairman, this is for any of you. I don't know if you know this answer or not, but in the event of a misclassification, other than the legal process, is there anything that departments can do in regards to, let's just say somebody gets hurt on the job and they're not paying workers' compensation premiums for them? Does the worker then have to go through the legal process, or is there anything within the department that can force the employer to actually come up with the premiums retroactive and put the person on the system? Is that anything you can do there, or is that totally out of your hands?
Right,
Senator Benson, Senator Tomasoni, excuse me, I apologize.
You're just used to the old days, yet.
Senator Tomasoni, the department does have the ability, when we do find out either complaint or find out someone has been injured, we do have the ability to go back and try to assess penalties. More often than not, if the individual has not been covered, though, the individual will be covered under workers' compensation, but more with the assigned risk plan, more that the plan that all employers will contribute to.
So it's not a matter of going through the legal process then?
We do have some abilities to go back and penalize.
And Chairman, Senator Tomasoni, the Department of Revenue also, we have the same tools, penalties and interest and other mechanisms that we have for every tax type. And so we can go back there and levy those on non-compliant taxpayers.
But does the injured employee then reap the benefits that you would have?
That is not relevant, I guess, to the Department of Revenue. I mean, we're worried about making sure they're doing the appropriate withholding and they're paying their fair share of taxes. That would come into play with workers' comp and
the injured employee, Senator Metzen and Chairman Metzen, excuse me, and Senator Tomasoni, the injured employee will be covered. It just depends out of what fund they would be covered. And Senator, of course, then there gets to be the question of whether that employee was an independent contractor or not. And with the rules that we're coming forward with folks in regards to the law that you passed last year, the rules are not going to take a position whether being an independent contractor is good or bad, whether being an employee is good or bad. But the rules are going to make sure that we can more clearly identify who are the independent contractors. And obviously, if you don't have that exemption for an independent contractor exemption, you are an employee. That's the basic thrust. If you don't have the exemption, you will be an employee. So we're trying to better identify Senator Tomasoni so we don't run into the problems after somebody gets hurt.
Maybe we need a couple of high-profile crackdowns or something to get the word out that we're serious in this state. You know, I've never seen anything in the paper, but just a thought. Senator Rosen.
Oh, Mr. Chair, my question was answered. Thank you.
Okay, we'll any further questions of the we'll kind of keep our eyes on you guys and see if we can get this all put together and
thank you, Chairman.
Take some taxes and
Mr. Chair,
whatever else you got to do. Senator Michelle.
Mr. Chair, I wonder if the committee wants to take advantage of Commissioner Swigum actually being here in a suit and a tie. That's not always a look that he's known for. We might want to move forward on confirmation rather quickly, Mr. Chair.
Sooner the better for Smigum. Is that what you said, or no?
So you're going to spend a lot of time at the dry cleaners this year.
Mr. Chairman, I only have two suits.
Down on the farm in Kenyon, you don't wear many suits. So. All right, I guess so.
Mr. Chairman, he's getting his high five up now, so he can probably buy a few.
But I think there was some suggestion or recommendation on the penalty or something being increased, and I don't know who's going to. That should be done legislatively, I guess, so we'll have to draft something or have. Is that correct? Is that what you guys got out of that, too?
Yeah, that's correct. It would require legislative action. I know in previous committees we had testified to the fact that we think we have adequate tools at our disposal to make sure people are compliant. But if you're in your better judgment, you think an enhanced penalty is in order or maybe a penalty for chronic noncompliance, we would defer to your judgment.
That's kind of what I'm thinking of, particularly on the repeat offenders. Maybe somebody could be excused once, but if they keep doing it, we'll look at that. We'll look into that, okay? Senator Koch.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would just like to maybe see how some of this plays out before we start. Yeah. I'm not sure. Obviously, anybody can bring any bill they want, but I think we're moving forward in the right direction, and maybe I'd like to see that play out a little more.
Yeah, I think that's fair, and they've had a little time already, but we're going to give them a little more time, okay?
As an employer, well, thank you.
Yeah, we're not, you know. All right, I guess that's good. For the committee members, Monday is a very, in my opinion, and I think you share it, important meeting with Northwest Airlines and Delta folks. Mac will be here. And other interested parties, because let me kind of frame it this way. It's from my point of view, it's not meant to be like a big witch hunt or anything. A lot of the employees are out in Senator Carlson in my district, particularly at the executive offices, are 1,200 people. I think 500 or 600 are domiciled where we live. I wouldn't think that they would be replaced or moved. And there's just some basic questions I think we should talk about. It's big for this committee, and again, nobody's out to take a ball peen hammer after anybody, but and they've been good corporate citizens in the past, but they think about 12,000 employees just in the state of Minnesota. But we just want to know, are we going to remain a hub? And we get all the questions, but that's the deal. But be here at 12:30, and I think there might be a few people in the room.
I think so.
Well, with that, Senator Day.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for doing that. I think all of us are getting a lot of questions from our constituents, and makes it better for us to.
Yeah, I just think it's so healthy. Senator Day, thank you for saying that, that we ought to know.
Yes.
Right. A Fortune 500 company, and being the jobs committee, we've had some setbacks with Macy's lately. What else? Wilson's Leather and what have you. And maybe they'll get here and say, hey, we're going to keep the hub as big or bigger. Maybe we might even add some employees. I don't know that. But I know we're going to lose some out at least at the executive. But that's the purpose of the meeting. And if you can be here at 12:30 next Monday. And so with that, meeting's adjourned.
Would you know? Yeah, no kidding.
Well, better way to frame it.